Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. I am your intrepid host, Paul Wadlington, joined by Randy Boone. Randy, I got a question for you. I don't actually know the answer to this. Are you a Randall, or are you Randy, or just are you just Randy, or are you a Randall or Randominus? Is it short for something really long and cool, like a long Roman name or something?
It's an unheard of name from like the early BCs, but nobody really knows the real pronunciation. So no, okay. My parents said they're going to call him Randy anyway, so they went with Randy.
And it's Randy with an I, is that correct?
I-E. There's a guy at work with this. He's like, oh, Randy with an I, like with an I-E. That's just his initial thing. And it kind of stuck for a while. But it is just Randy, straight up okay. Randy.
Randy made me think of like, so in Australia, I don't know if you know this, but they just add Y to everything. And so they'll, to describe a group or something or a person. So I'll give you an example. Like Australia has a pretty big motorcycle gang culture. And, you know, they're motorcycle gang guys, right? They go around like the road warrior and, you know, they kind of mind their own business, but they're involved in like typical, like low-level crime, drug dealing. They mostly beat the crap out of other biker gangs and, you know, go around and break up bars every now and then. And in Australia, they call them bikies. It doesn't sound very intimidating, does it?
It's like what's that movie?
Break up the bar. Oh my God.
What's that movie? Snatch? Brad
Snatch?
Pitt?
That's
the Pikies or Pikers or whatever they call it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pikies are like Irish travelers.
Yeah.
And they are a unique subculture of England.
Great movie.
It is a great movie. It's fantastic. Brad Pitt is actually amazing in that.
He's really good. Yeah.
I think that's one of his best roles ever.
Man, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but no, it's a great movie. I loved it.
That, and have you ever seen Burn After Reading, the Coen Brothers movie?
No, I don't think I ever got around to that. It's probably on a list somewhere.
You would like it. I love the Coen Brothers. I think they're the best filmmakers ever. But Brad Pitt plays a really dumb fitness personal trainer. And there's a couple of scenes in that movie that are just classic. You've got to. That's well worth your time.
I know what you're talking about. No, I have not seen it, but it's very interesting from the people that I've talked to that have seen it. So many things that are on a list of things to get to.
Yeah. So anyway, my circuitous logic was in Australia, they just add a Y to be descriptive of someone or something. So like a random at a party.
Like Randy.
That guy's a Randy, right?
Could have been how the name came about. I don't know.
Think that
my parents we're not Australian, so I don't know.
You're not from the Australian part of Yoko?
No, we're heavy Czech with a little bit of Irish thrown in.
Really? That is true Central Texas heritage right there, man.
Oh, yeah. That's Pier 51 in Galveston.
That's all Germans and Czechs, right? That's all, like, it's why we have Fredericksburg and New Braunfels. And it's such an interesting combo and heritage. Like, I don't know if they still do this, but like when I was a kid, they taught us Texas history before they taught us American history.
I recall that in school. We definitely had it simultaneously. I don't know if it was before, but it was definitely taught in elementary school for me, for sure. Yeah.
Well, you know, what's wild too, is through my life, I've just at different times in different social groups, I'm knowledgeable about Texas history, right? Like the different Indian groups and what they were like and the Texas frontier and Rangers and just all of it, right? The early Mexican vaqueros, all that stuff. And people are like, how do you know all this? And I was like, well, I read, but also you're taught this in Texas, you know? And they're like, you know, growing up in New York, like you don't learn New York history. Like you might know who the Iroquois are, but so I wonder if they still do that in Texas. So if you've got young kids in school in Texas, Randy, you'll find out soon. But seventh grade that they like really got after it. But yeah, I mean, to this day, I can name like every major Indian tribe and their traits and like,
You're well more versed in it than I am, but history is very interesting. My wife gets annoyed all the time because I always stop and read historical markers and
I do stuff the same like crap. That. I do the same.
So stuff. There's a thing popped up the other day. I'm not a big Facebook guy, but there's a Lavaca County history group that had like a 1876 map or whatever. And there's a town near here named Star that I've never heard of it. Nobody's ever heard of it. So it like led on this big, long, you know, investigatory trail of where was this? What was it? Why did it die? All this stuff. So it's about a 2-day rabbit hole, but no, so I like all that stuff. It's interesting.
Me too. So when I lived in the Bay Area, this is wild. Talk about interesting, like coming together and intertwining of history and my own personal life. I'm living out in San Francisco and I'm in Oakland and I was checking out something. And like you, I stopped at a historical marker and it was all about the first mayor of Oakland who owned like a huge part of the Oakland Hills. He was a former Texas Ranger. And the deal was, he was kind of a famous one. And the deal was back then, if you were like an ambitious person in the 1800s or early, maybe 1900s as well, you went west to San Francisco because that was like the city of where you made it. And there also the gold rush was a part of that and all that stuff and the economy and the ocean and all that. But sorry, my dog's about to go nuts. Come here. Come here. Cut it out. All right. Sorry about that. But this dude did his stint with the Rangers and then went out to Oakland, became prosperous, bought a bunch of land, and then ended up becoming one of the first mayors of Oakland. And he's got a historical house there and all that kind of stuff. So, of course, I'm stopping and reading all these historical markers. That's also where Jack London spent a lot of his time. And the girl I was with was like, why are you doing are you doing this just to bother me? You can't really be interested in this. I was like, yes, I'm actually interested in this. So like even when I'm cruising channels and there's suddenly World War II footage and there's something, I'm like, oh, got to watch this for a while. What are we doing? Who are we fighting here? Oh, it's Germans.
Yep. No, I said to me, it's fascinating. Other people, it's probably boring as hell, but.
All right. Well, speaking of history, I actually wrote a post today on Inside Texas that I wanted to get into a little bit of the history of Texas football coaches. And I looked at the history since DKR and basically tried to look at, is there a common thread at Texas of success based on your trend line? And is it year X that everything hits and comes together? Right. And, the basic thing I found out from my analysis was there's no trend line for anything because everyone is kind of looking at, okay, Sark 5-7, 8-5, 12-2. Hey, I know where this line's headed. It's up and to the right. Right. So year 4, I mean, we got to win the national title or, you know, we're going to go.
Yeah. We're going to
13-1.
Yeah, we're going to win more games than are on the schedule.
That's right. Exactly. We're going to
be 18-0.
We're going to carry over wins to next year. That's how much we're going to win. And obviously, that's fallacious thinking. But I think what's interesting is your expectations are built. The success of a season is built on, did we fulfill the expectations I had before the year?
Yes, agreed.
But before the year, we're not great predictors, typically, of how good your team's going to be, good or bad. And so I kind of use DKR as an example. So I don't know if you know the history, but he took over in 57 for a guy named Ed Price. Mm-hmm. And if you read the Junction Boys, there's a hilarious passage in it about when the sports writers went to go visit the University of Texas in that 56 season. And it was like a practice field. Half the team was sitting on like a grassy little hill, watching it sitting on their helmets. Intermingled with them as a bunch of good-looking co-eds chatting and flirting with them. And then every now and then the coaches would call someone and he'd go run in and practice. It was amazing, right? These guys went 1-9, unsurprisingly. So DKR comes in. He's kind of old school, even though he's a young guy. They go 6-4-1 in that first year. And they finish 11th in the country despite that record because they play like this incredible schedule and they play really well against it. And so he turns around Texas, builds all these expectations. And then the next year they win, I don't know, eight. The next year they win nine and they finish fourth in the country. And year four is pointed to as this is going to be the year, 1960, right? And they go like 7-4 or 7-3-1. And they don't fulfill the expectations, right? Everyone thinks they're going to be a national title contender or win 10 games or whatever. And so he gets criticized. Their offense is terrible, all this stuff. And so my point in my piece was, if you'd gone and asked a Texas fan, hey, is Daryl Royal going to win three national titles over the next 10 years? They would have like laughed at you. Like, what are you talking about? Like, he improved the program. He's good, but he's reached his ceiling, right? We have all the data we need on Daryl Royal now. He wins 70% of his games, and we're going to be respectable, but we can't play with the elite. The next 4 years after 1960, Texas went 40, three lo 40 wins, three losses, one tie. They win a national title. They almost win two others, and they have like crazy upsets. That's where you get the TCU cockroaches quote
Yep.
from Daryl Royal. It's not so much what they towed off, it's what they fall into and ruin. That's what he was talking about that season. So anyway, my point was with Sark, I'm trying to make this relevant, is let's judge him by a greater block of time than just the trend line of this year.
I would hope that over the last 3 years, that he's demonstrated enough to where a intelligent, reasonable person can say, I'm not going to say unequivocally because you never know what's going to happen, but I mean, he's the guy right now to me. Like it would have to just tank off a cliff. I mean, yeah, I mean, you want to see the trajectory keep going upward, but you're also moving to the SEC. It's football, who knows, all of this kind of stuff. But as long as the product on the field keeps improving, which it has exponentially, and the talent in the program keeps improving, I mean, he's the guy to me right now.
Yeah, what I like about what you said is it's leading indicators, right? If the program, capital P, is prospering, don't sweat one individual year where an injury, a bad break, a player not, a group of, a position group not developing the way you want, or one coach screwing up, you got to ditch him in the offseason. Like, don't let it poison the longer build because typically, it goes in fits and starts,
Yep.
right? That all said, I'm not trying to prepare everyone for 2024 is going to be some kind of letdown. I mean, it could
No, I
be.
think it's no, I think it's going to be a very successful season, but
Yeah.
it's also, I mean, it's football. You know, couple ear ill-fated things and this and that, and I mean, I don't see a team that just there's too much talent for it to just fall off the cliff. But I'm not saying you can't lose a couple unfortunate games by two or three or, you know, a late touchdown here or there.
Like, what if Arch Manning gets injured and we have to play Quinn Ewers all year?
I know. Yeah. I mean,
I
what are we supposed
mean,
to do then?
yeah, there you go. We're up a
Man,
creek.
Quinn's interview the other day, speaking, I mean, I'm gonna kind of derail your thought there, but Quinn's
Derail it.
interview,
I didn't see it.
man,
Please
Quinn's
brief
interview
me
the
on
other
it.
day, I mean, it was just so mature. And I mean, they asked him about the pro day thing. He's like, man, I was just the arm out there. Those guys made me look good. Like he just, I know it's just an interview or whatever, but it's just listening to him talk. It's just like, yeah, he's at a spot. And then he made the comment about, you know, not going pro because he felt like he'd been rushing. You know, his whole life's been rushed, and it's been refreshing for him to just slow it down and really immerse himself and feels like he has a great connect. And I don't know, everything he said was just so mature and sounded like the guy you want leading your team. It was
Damn,
impressive, I thought.
so independently, You're the second person today to bring up that interview.
Really?
And
Oh, interesting.
yeah, and the person said, "Man, I was just impressed with his demeanor,
Yeah, I mean, I know he's not, I mean,
like
he's
how he
not throwing a
approached everything."
football. Yeah, he's not throwing a football in the face of a defensive tackle trying to tackle him. I understand that's how he's going to ultimately be judged, but it just exuded confidence and maturity, and I am the leader to me.
I am the leader to me. That
Comma to
I
me. Maybe that's a semicolon. I don't know. I never really figured out the semicolon thing.
am the leader hyphen
Yeah.
gerund to me.
There you go.
Randy
Yeah.
Boone, 2024.
Exactly. Yeah. Wasn't an English major.
You're gonna be sitting at the Easter dinner that you're gonna be hosting for your family, and you're gonna get up and you're like, "I'd like to say a few words. I am the leader to me." And then you like jerk your you like
Yeah, point to
push your thumb
myself.
very vigorously into your chest. Me. And then you sit down.
No,
Please eat.
not much of a speech guy.
Really? Shocker. I've seen you endure a couple of speeches before, famously.
Done that. Definitely done that.
That's awesome. Yeah, hey, that's really interesting that he mentioned the rushing thing, because I mean, he's right?
Yeah, absolutely he is. Never thought about it, but yeah.
Everything's sped up, and he's always like, he was always jumping for that brass ring. It's like, hey, man, like you could have developed as a high school senior. Hey, man, if you could have gotten into the Sark's program early and then redshirted a year. And it would have been huge for him, but he took his lumps. God
Yes.
knows he took his lumps, and now he's at a very different place. Hey, I heard that it looks like he's put some weight back on. It's like good weight.
Yeah, they said he's like at 205 and they're trying to get him back to about 210.
That's great.
I think that's probably about right for him. But I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be like a, he just doesn't have the body type to like bulk up. But I mean, every little bit helps, and durability's definitely not had or definitely hasn't been a strong suit of his so far. So he was sitting down talking to a microphone, but I mean, his arms looked a little bigger, neck looked a little bigger. So
What's good?
I think it's definitely good weight, whatever he's put on. It's definitely not bad.
He needs some armor.
For sure.
Yeah, I saw an interview about the Aaron Rodgers, I think, about that. And he was pretty, when he came out of college, it's funny if you look at college pictures of him, he was pretty cut up and like fit. He was fast too. He ran a good 40 at his combine. And he started lifting really heavy a couple of years in the NFL, and people were asking him about it. And that coincided, oh, amazingly, with his arm strength drastically improving. So if you go back and read his college scouting reports, it's like adequate arm strength, solid arm strength. And then he gets by year five in the NFL, he's considered one of the strongest arm guys in the league, right? And part of it is because he put on about 20, 25 pounds. And they were asking him about it. And he was like, "It's armor, man." He's like, "There's a difference between weighing 230 and getting tackled and weighing 205, and I can feel it." And he's like, I just need it. And he's like, plus it made me have a stronger arm and I don't get injured and stuff like that. But yeah, there's something to that.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, maybe as Quinn gets older and whatever, maybe that number climbs, but I don't know. I think 210 is a good goal for him. But yeah, newsflash to most gurus and everything out there. You throw with a lot more than your arm.
Amazing.
It's crazy how that works.
Yeah, I learned that in boxing. Your punch starts at your foot.
Absolutely.
Like, so that's why if you guys have ever wondered, if you just think it's nonsense, or it's not even actually reported much anymore, but it used to be reported back in the day, when like circa 1975. You could ask any male or 60, certainly 55, 75, 80, maybe it started to fade, but you could ask any male in the United States who's the heavyweight champion of the world. and they'd look at you crazy, like they'd answer instantly, right? You ask people now, and they're like, are the Klitschko's retired? Yeah, 5 years ago. Oh, is it? I don't know. Lennox Lewis. I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, so the point of it was that they used to have big debates for like a big prize fight of what ring surface are we going to use? Like, are we using a tacky, like you can get good grip, or are we using a slick ring mat, right? Oh, what, and then obviously they debate and argue about gloves. Floyd Mayweather was one of the last guys who would actually hold out on fights if people wouldn't agree to the type of flooring, the canvas that he wanted, and the type of gloves that he wanted. Because he was like, it actually makes a big difference and people don't realize it. It's like a forgotten art of boxing. But anyway, point is throwing, whether it's throwing a punch or throwing an object, it starts at your feet
Ground
on the ground.
up.
Yep, absolutely. That's why I cannot be trained and throw in the 60s. So, not bragging. I know I've mentioned that to you before. And just saying, had I been trained, no way I don't crack 95. Easy. Easy.
Super simple.
It's super easy. You just throw in an object, you just do it hard.
Just throw it harder.
That's right. Just throw it harder. It'll go exactly where it's supposed to
My
go.
favorite. Just throw strikes. Yep, trying.
All right, well, exactly. All right, well, I know a gentleman that if you call him up, it's going to be the financial equivalent of throwing strikes. And that man is David McClellan. He has been a sponsor of this podcast from the very beginning. And I know some of you have availed yourselves of speaking to Mr. McClellan, and I've gotten the raves of folks who have talked to him. Look, whatever your financial situation, if you're someone who is in the process of accumulating wealth or already have some, and if particularly if you've got some and a big piece of that is in tax retirement vehicles, 401ks, traditional IRAs, etc., David McClellan is a guy you need to talk to. He is an absolute subject matter expert with regards to that. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Just set up a consultation with him. He's not going to put you on a freaking email list and like harass you. He's just basically trying to see if he can help you out and also mutually assess whether you guys might be a fit of working together. If so, carry forward. If not, you talk to a really smart financial guy for 30 minutes who is a subject matter expert. As I said, he has a 9-part series in Kiplinger Financial Magazine about your retirement tax bomb. And you might say, oh, I know about required distributions and I know all about taxation on the Roth IRA versus regular IRA. You have a shallow level of knowledge, just like me. And when you talk to David for about 3 minutes, you'll realize that there are levels to this. And anyway, I'm not going to hard sell his services. Do yourself a favor. And keep more of your money. I'm a fan of that, Mr. Boone. I'm not sure if you're a fan of that as well. Reach
Absolutely.
him. Reach him at 312-933-8823. All right, man. Are we going to talk baseball, or do we need to give them some more time?
Oh, so hold on. Before I just while you were talking there, I pulled up the Daryl Royal thing. What would you say if in a vacuum Texas was going to hire a head coach next year? And I were to tell you that his previous stops, he went 6-4,
At
six and
Mississippi State,
four,
yeah.
and 5-5 at Washington.
At Washington, yeah. He had 3 years
People
of head
would
coaching experience.
lose their minds.
You know who that's like?
No.
Steve Sarkisian.
He had better records than
I
no.
mean, he did, but Sark
But
was
yes.
a pretty
No, you're right.
lengthy
You're right.
period of mediocrity, right? He never had the breakout. And that was
But
the
at least it was lengthy. I mean, this is
well
three years. This is
that
3 years of
no
500 football.
well and so people also looked older back then, partly how they looked, but also how they carried themselves, right? They I mean it's for lack of a better phrase, it's, and it's, I think it's accurate. People were not as juvenile back then, right? Sort of like how men carried themselves. And Daryl Royal was in his early 30s, like when he got the head coaching job at Texas. If you ask the average person, they'll be like, well, I don't know. He's 44 when he got the job, 42, you know. He was in his 30s and he had a young staff, young, hungry staff.
No idea that he coached in the Canadian Football League, by the way.
He coached in the CFL. Yeah.
The
Isn't that wild?
year before Mississippi State hired him, 12-4 with the Edmonton Oilers. I'm assuming it was the Oilers back then. I don't know.
I thought it was the Edmonton Eskimos.
Maybe they are. Edmonton Oilers is the hockey team. You're right. Or am I? I don't know. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Eskimos. You're right.
Yeah. Don't test me on Canadian football, dude.
So he was 750 in the CFL,
Well, I
750%
mean,
or
that's pro
75% winning percent.
experience. That's a winner.
I just can't imagine the picket and the people with
Oh, you know
just
what?
losing their minds.
Dude, it's not the Eskimos. Think about it. It's now the Edmonton Elks.
Oh,
So
you can't say that
Eskimo,
anymore.
yeah, it's considered a. By the
Well,
way,
in
the actual.
1953, it was the Eskimos, Paul.
Yeah, well, by the way, if you actually ask the Inuit, they're like, you can call us Eskimo. We don't care. But it's Canada,
Well,
man.
who cares anymore?
Exactly.
Who cares what the actual people think?
So I had a buddy who worked, he volunteered for a year as like a Teach for America thing, and he did it on an Indian reservation. And he has some amazing stories. I mean, like,
I can imagine.
amazing. But he said it was really common for the teenagers to wear Redskins hats because they were like, yeah, you're like, it's ironic. And they're like, we don't care. It's fine. Like,
Right, yeah.
we're not offended. But yeah, pretty interesting. But Indian reservation, not a safe place, Randy. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
I've heard.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
I know they made one. No, I haven't seen it.
It's really good with Jeremy Renner. Oh, dang it, I can't remember the name of it. Can you Google that?
I
We're gonna
will.
race. We're gonna race for the Googling. Someone's screaming out in the air right
What
now in their
should I
car.
Google? Wind River.
Wind River.
Yoakum Internet wins over
Yes.
Colorado.
Never challenge Yoakum Broadband. Wind River is a great flick. It is great.
Paul's throttled down by the Air Force. They had to like double check everything he types in.
That's right. Well, that's for other reasons. I don't want to get into that. But Wind River, very good. Add that to your list along with Burn After Reading. But Jeremy Renner is awesome in it.
I'll check that one out. I'm not on the list, but I'll put it on there. But anyway, I danced around it enough. So yeah, sure. Let's go.
All right,
Baseball.
I'm not going to put you on the spot because you're a proud Texas baseball alum, and we're not playing great baseball at the moment. Would that be fair?
I think that's fair to say.
They're 15 and 11. They lost a midweek series to what, Corpus or something?
Well, it wasn't a series, it was one game.
Oh, sorry, one game.
But
I
yeah, no,
apologize.
they lost to Corpus A&M the other day, 4-1.
And then they just got the hammer dropped on them by K-State.
In a game that
More,
started well.
yeah. Pitching's
Don't know, I
not
can't figure it
been
out. Yeah, I mean
great.
pitching hasn't been good, and
Hitting's not been timely.
I would say they hit pretty well, but they do not play offense well at all.
That's a good distinction.
There's been multiple times this year where we have had bases loaded, no outs, and either gotten zero or one run. I don't think we move runners extremely well. Situational hitting's not good, and as you said, timely hitting's definitely not good. But it's one of those deals. Yeah, I mean, you can win 12-4, 12-4, and then lose 2-1. And the numbers look good, but it's how you play the game and how the game dictates, what you need to do to win. But yeah, the pitching thing's just been kind of crazy this year. I mean, LeBaron's been very up and down. I mean, today he gives off to a good start and then the wheels fall off and bullpen's been very, very shaky. I wouldn't even say shaky, it's just been unreliable. I feel like if you can get the ball to Bame with a lead, it's been good, but that's been kind of a stretch. And then, I mean, they shook it up last weekend, and Whitehead and Grubb had a really good Saturday and Sunday starts. So hopefully that's a sign of things to improve moving forward. But I mean, they're unproven and thrust into a starting role right in the middle of the season. So it's just, I don't know, it's a head scratcher. I mean, I just overall, it's just, it's not looking like it's gonna trend upward, but hopefully they figure it out. We'll see.
Do you think David Pierce should fire his pitching coach?
It's a tough gig if you make yourself pitching coach and then pitching ends up being the question mark. I mean, and I understand like his logic and everything behind it, thinking that, hey, this was kind of my thing before, and I've never really trusted anybody is kind of what he said. So, I'm going to do it, but it's a hard, I mean, it's a hard thing to do to be the head guy and the pitching coach and this and that. And I don't know much about, the rest of the guys that whoever assist him with that, but I don't know. It's baseball. It's a long season. Things happen, but
A lot of staff turnover.
a lot of staff turnover. I would just say that I think for this team in the conference in the Big 12 this year, there are pieces around that if we can get those to fit and figure it out, that it can be successful this year. Hopefully. But I would think that you would need to see a pretty large turnover and or shift going into the gauntlet of the SEC from a talent standpoint. Just from the games that I watch in the SEC or whatever, the talent over there is, it's on a different level than what the Big 12 offers right now. Day in, day out, week in, week out. And
Agreed.
you better be ready. You can have a damn good baseball team and go 45% winning percentage over there and sneak in the postseason and make some noise.
All right, I know that was painful for you. Should I let you off the hook now? We'll move on.
I'll spit the hook.
This is
I just gave up seven in the second and got yanked in the third, and we scored eight in the fourth, and I went, yes, I'm out. I'm off
Well, as
the
we determined
hook.
last week when we talked, when I came out to yank you, you were like, no, I'm not leaving.
Now, if I give up seven in the third, I'd probably be like, yeah, you're right. I suck today, coach. You're
You start walking off the mound before
I
he even
always thought,
signals to you.
no, I always thought I could figure it out, even when I knew that I probably couldn't figure it out.
Well, that's good. That's the confidence of an athlete. You better have it.
But anyway, I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, they could win two out of three up there, and I mean, I think Kansas State's actually leading the conference right now, which I know you're only 2 or 3 weekends in, but one game doesn't define a season, one weekend doesn't. But at this point, it just, you're kind of waiting for them to turn the corner, and then waiting for them to turn the corner, and before you know it, you're halfway through the season, and it's like, all right, where are we going?
Yep. Hey, any thoughts on hoops? They won their first round game, Colorado State, lost to Tennessee. That was a pretty ugly game. I think the game was close because Texas played D pretty well, but also Tennessee went 3 of 25 from three and missed. I'd say half of their looks were open or good, and they just bricked them.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, you're correct on both those points, but I thought the story of the game was just basically the things throughout the year that you were worried about
Showed up.
became things.
Yeah.
Didn't protect the ball. Hunter had a subpar Hunter game. It wasn't good Hunter. Didn't get a whole lot out of the supporting cast type stuff. Asemus was having to take crazy, I mean, as evident by the last shot of the game, like, I don't know. It to me, it was a very good illustration of, hey, by the way, you remember all that stuff y'all were worried about during the season? Yeah, it was still a problem.
Yeah, the only thing that I kind of had a problem with from a game management standpoint, two things actually. One, being able to inbound the ball is important.
Helpful.
It helps in basketball. I'm not a basketball expert, but my understanding is that's a important aspect of the game that you can work on. The second part is the MVP of the Colorado State game was Kendall Weaver. The MVP of the Tennessee game was Kendall Weaver. The last 5 minutes of the game, he was sitting on the bench with a towel and a juice box.
Yeah, he played as many minutes as I did when it mattered.
So Kendall Weaver was the only guy who could get in the lane and finish. He was the only guy who could go to the foul line. He went six times. The rest of the team combined went six times. He was playing great D. Why? I mean, he was the best player in both games. I'm not saying he was the best player on the team overall. I'm just saying it's a tournament and ride the hot hand. Why not keep him in? And I know Dylan Mitchell actually did a great job of defending on Connect, but Weaver was doing a pretty good job as well. Are we just so married to Hunter and Azmus as a combo that they had to finish the game, or we couldn't go three guards with Mitchell and Dessou up front, play like a smaller lineup, and then basically try to draw out Tennessee and see if we could get some drives going, clear out the lane for Weaver? I mean, I'm just trying to think a little beyond like very conventional thinking of how we approach the game.
Yeah, I'm usually the guy that can see that angle, and I don't see one. I'm like you, by no means a basketball aficionado, but I mean, I know enough about the game to know that the guy that's been your best player needs to be on the floor. We had a good, like a pretty good free throw shooting team this year, and they were just like averse to trying to drive and draw fouls. Like, it's just, if somebody remotely D'd them up, it's like, well, we guess we got to shoot from 26 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, we shot the ball pretty good from outside, but it's, I mean, I wouldn't, there's nobody on our lineup that I would have circled and be like, man, we can't leave this guy open. Like, he'll kill us. Like, yeah, Azmus could have a good day, or somebody could have a good day or whatever. But I mean, we didn't trot out anybody that was just like, man, that made it.
You know,
I don't know, this is weird. And a lot of people don't like the offense we run. I don't know if it's necessarily an offense thing or just like a philosophy thing. Like, I mean, the pick and roll thing is kind of a basketball. That's kind of how basketball is played now. It's an open offense. You pick and roll. You do all this kind of stuff. And it's sort of where the game's gone. Like the motion offense, unless you're Princeton or somebody like that, like, yeah, it's pretty much out. But it's just, you just don't see us turn the corner and get aggressive much. I don't know.
Back to Weaver.
Right. And he would. So I don't know.
And not just that, through the year and really in the tournament, he's fearless at the rim. He can elevate and finish, even though he's 6'3". And he'll go to line and he'll knock him down, right? He doesn't mind getting knocked down. The other thing is you've got Dylan Mitchell, who has no real offensive game, but have him run at the rim on the weak side while Weaver drives.
Absolutely.
And if help comes, you could throw it up for a dunk. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's NBA basketball, right? You have your finisher and you have your driver. We never really incorporated that. And you know, you could space with Hunter and Azmus. You have to respect their shot.
Right. Yeah, you can't just leave him alone.
Yeah, and Dessou, I mean, he's a face-up big, right? He's kind of a finesse guy. He's not really – so that makes the lane clear. And I guess I just – I don't understand our lack of experimentation with some of that stuff. You would have liked to have seen it during the year so you could,
yes,
you could unveil it in the tournament. I don't know. I'm just, the team was frustrating from the way you're reticent to talk about baseball. I'm reticent to talk about basketball because I understand the deficiencies of the team, but I didn't see a lot of workshopping to try to fix it with what they can do. And, you know, they'll get another hack at it. And you know, I'll just say in closing, unless you have something more, I would like to be pleasantly surprised by Rodney Terry.
I think he's easy to root for. Agreed.
Agreed.
Like I would love to see him succeed. Time will tell.
Yeah, it will. What else we got going on, man?
I don't know. Is golf doing anything?
No, we're not that desperate.
Swimming and diving got like second and something, right? No, I'm just kidding. They probably did, but
Swimming and diving is either first
they
or
never
second.
finished. Yeah, they're the first or second. Oh, hey, there was a stat the other day I heard. Texas has won 67 national titles or something crazy. You know how many times we finished second?
Oh God, 100
Same
and
amount.
oh, really? Okay.
Absolutely. Whatever, I think whatever it was, if it was swimming or whatever that sport was that finished second,
So
it made it
134 times Texas has
made it
won
even.
or shown as in horse
Yeah,
racing terms.
it was crazy.
That is wild. Well, it truly is a coin flip if you make the title game, right?
Yeah, and I know a lot of them aren't actually a title game, but still, it's pretty impressive that you've been up there that many
Oh,
times. But
title tournament. Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
tournament, whatever. But anyway,
Neat.
what else do we have going on sports wise? That's kind of where I live. Just hoping the baseball team turns a corner.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can tell you the Twins T-ball team is off to a torrid start. We're
All right,
just
talk to me about this. So Randy is coaching his son's T-ball team. He's sort of a Bob Knight type
Oh
guy.
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Randy, as you know, is very high energy, nervous personality. Are you hazing the kids? Are you breaking them in slowly? What's the punishment for missing a ball on the tee? What are you trying to do to motivate these little guys?
So no, I'm pretty laid back and positive, which is kind of weird for me to think about myself that way when it comes to being on a field, because personality wise I am, but used and on the game field I was not quite that way. But I did learn one important lesson in the last game. If your team has been in one dugout for the first game and you move to the other dugout for the second game, it is important to have the conversation with your 3 and 4 year olds that you still run the same direction to first base,
If you hit the ball,
which was a large problem that I
that's
was not anticipating
awesome.
having.
So they
Hey, we're
thought the
doing really good. We have,
dugout.
yep, you run to the dugout.
That makes
Because that's where
sense.
everybody always stands at practice. Everybody's always standing by that base. So you run to that base. Well, if you switch to the third base dugout and all your parents and your friends and everybody are down there, then you must go that way, apparently.
Honestly, that's flawless logic.
Kids are a lot smarter than you give them credit for.
That's how baseball
So,
should be played.
but yeah, no, we so had a couple, but hey, man, the kids have done great. We got rained out, only had three practices, and I've missed a couple games due to rainouts. But I mean, we got people swinging with reckless abandon out there.
Nice.
Telling them, was like, hey, nobody wants to see you tap it 4 feet in front of home plate. I want to see you swing that thing. I don't care if you miss a couple of times. We're taking the Dominican approach.
Nice.
So,
Dingers.
but it's been good. It's been fun. They have about a 30-minute attention span, which is 15 minutes too short for the 45-minute time limit we have. So,
Yeah.
and we've been the visiting team both games we've played, so we're out in the field for the last, 15 to 20 minutes, which is a real chore.
It's our outs are hard to come by.
There are no outs. You just field it and throw it to first. Yeah, I know the guy's there and he's been there for an hour, but you field it and you throw it to first. The first
Yes.
baseman has to go find it wherever the hell it went, and then pick it up and go touch the base and then you throw it back to home. But no, they're doing good. It's been fun. It's been
Have
fun.
you noticed that all of the kids today are named like,
Oh no, I have we ha our team completely bucks that mold.
Oh, so there's not like a bunch of Haydens and Connors and
No,
Dillons and Tuckers.
all over the joint.
Oh,
All
okay.
over the joint.
All
Yeah.
right.
No, I got an Obadiah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, call him Obi.
I had a Josiah.
Most improved player from practice one to now, by the way. Like
That's what.
crazy.
Oh,
Just a little bit of confidence. It's amazing what like a 4 year old or a 5 year old kid can do if they like have like just a little bit of, oh wow, no, I can do this. It's crazy.
you need to tear that out of from him. You need to teach him that this game's not fun. It's about trying to earn a college scholarship one day. And it's about spending tens of thousands of dollars in travel baseball in high school, even though you're an absolutely mediocre athlete with no chance of getting a scholarship. That's what this is all about, Randy. That's
Now
awesome.
everybody's kid's gonna be Mike Trout, man.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they sell you on.
It's funny. Bud Elliott always used to say, because he was a he, so Bud Elliott's a big recruiting guru or whatever. Like he worked for 24/7. He worked for SB Nation when I was there, and he's a good guy. He's on the Cover Three podcast, if you guys listen to the college football podcast. But he's kind of like a recruiting expert and Florida guy. And he used to say, I was with him at a Nike camp one time in Oregon, and he was like, I get bothered all the time by different people and parents, like, hey, this is my kid. He's nine. What do you think? And he's like, hey, it would actually be better if you just sent me a picture of you and your wife and all of your athletic accomplishments. And then I'll be much be better able to project what your child's going to do. Cause I don't care that he's like the dominant 8-year-old right now. It doesn't mean anything. And
Absolutely.
Genetics are going to trump most of that stuff down the road. And also, anything you accomplish pre-puberty doesn't necessarily carry over post.
Not
So,
unless NIL really takes off and moves up. Yeah, no, it's not helping.
no, not at all. Man,
So anyway,
have there been any takeaways from the spring or anything you've heard that has caught your attention or interest?
that was one thing I was going to ask you, because it's curious, or it makes me curious as to what we got going on. But what do you think about the wide receiver room?
I think they're good. I think whoever wins it is going to be good. And I don't think it's guaranteed that the transfers are going to be starting, as everyone's assuming.
Do you see the rotation widening, or you think it's going to be, hey, knock down, drag out, let's get this going. You want a spot? Prove
I
it.
think Sark has his three, and that's just how it's him with him. I mean, he wants that continuity, right? Now, if you are kind of sophisticated and always in your playbook and you know what to do, then he'll expand it to four and five. But we're not rotating eight dudes. This isn't the Tom
Oh
Herman era.
no.
Like
I'm not expecting that at all. No.
Sark wants his three, and you might get a fourth or a fifth getting thrown into the mix if they have an interesting skill set, but he's not going to put a guy out there who doesn't know what they're doing. He just won't do it. So, I think it's going to be dog eat dog. Be very interesting.
That's the way it should be.
That I mean, that's a, I think Isaiah Bond is going to start. Let me be clear. But everyone
Yes.
thinks our starting three are Bond, Golden, Bolden.
No.
And I think it could be two of the three. But then also, Golden has to show that he can play a full season. And, there's a lot of factors. And dude, Jonte Cook is good, DeAndre Moore is very good.
I think he's under, I don't know if he's underrated. I think he's overlooked by most of our fan base.
He is. I actually brought this up on an Inside Texas podcast, the deep dive with Ian Boyd and Justin Wells, and they were like, who do you think is like a story we haven't talked about enough? And I was like, well, DeAndre Moore. He came out of California, and the knock on the rap on him was good route runner, good hands, average athlete in terms of athleticism, all that. He gets in, has an off season, and they're like, he's one of the five or six fastest guys on the team. And he weighs like 195, 200 now. And he hasn't lost like the ability to run routes.
It's crazy how people can get pigeonholed like that.
They get pigeonholed, and also Texas fans, to their for good reason often, but they need to be better than this, right? Texas fans, maybe it's college football fans in general, but they believe in a static world, Randy.
Yeah,
They
nobody
think
can get better. That's it.
a 19-year-old is maxed out, and it's crazy. And you know what? Sometimes they are, but most of the time they're not. And
Not.
in a real program, dudes get better till they're 22. And by the way, when they go to the NFL, they get better too. So I just think that there's a static worldview with player development. And by the way, that was pretty well earned at the end of the Mac Brown era, right? And through Charlie
Yes.
Strong and all that. But man, guys can get better. And people are like, oh, you know, even like Baron Sorrell, they're like, well, we know what he is. It's like, okay, I do. We do know what it is. And also know that every year he's improved. So are we sure we know what he is? Like, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. So yeah, DeAndre Moore, people have it's weird. People will say in a vacuum that they want competition. And that's why we're bringing in these great recruiting classes and transfers. But when they pick their pet guy and
Yep.
they're like, oh, if this guy doesn't start, we're going to suck. Or if he's injured, it's like, hey, man, DeAndre Moore just may beat all these dudes out. He may just be better. Like, have you thought about that? Well, he was a four star and he was a low four. It's like, that doesn't matter. He's on campus now. Like, none of that matters. I mean, I wrote Jaden Blue off, not for developmental reasons. I wrote him off for off the
Yeah,
field
other
stuff.
stuff. Yep,
And you know
absolutely.
what? Jaden Blue's going to be badass this year. So, you know, well, I'm mea culpa. I'm guilty of it as well. But the whole notion that people top out physically when they're 19 or 17, even worse, drives me nuts.
No, I mean it's there's a hell of a lot of first round baseball players sitting at home on their couch watching 34th rounders pitch. And
Yeah.
that's not even 17 versus 20. That's 20 versus 25, 26, whatever. So I mean that evolution continues.
Dude, some freaking baseball pitchers don't hit their stride till they're 30.
And it's one tweak, man. I mean, it's one. I mean, one. Like, I mean, football's a little different, and it's not like you can be like, "Oh, hey, I'm gonna."
There's not a trick you can't learn a
You
knuckleball
can't.
and
Yeah, right.
suddenly
Yeah, you're not gonna.
like,
Hey, oh man, my finger pressure was off on my cutter. I just figured this
I've
thing
seen
out.
Casey Thompson throw some knuckleballs, but I don't think he learned it.
But your understanding and grasp of things, your athleticism can, improve somewhat.
Yeah.
But your understanding and grasp of concepts and what we're trying to do and how you take advantage of certain situations and your chemistry with the quarterback and I mean, it can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I'm eager to see this team. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's an interesting changing of the guard at some positions, right? And man, there's a lot of stuff Sark does off the field that's been really good. But man, our ability to bring in good transfers after a tough first year in terms of the transfer market, where we're just like scrambling to like get guys, right? Get bodies. Man, it's good. And if he can keep putting out the proof of concept of putting these guys in the league, I think Texas is going to be in really good shape.
I think that'll be a trend that will continue as every offseason it will be, man, who's gonna play?
Yeah.
Not, oh God, who's the fifth? Who's the fourth or fifth lineman going to be,
No,
or
it was the
whatever?
same
It's like now,
question, but a different tone. Who's going to play?
right, exactly, 100%, same words, 100% different meaning. You're right. Yeah, now it's like, man, we only got 85 scholarships. Like, all these dudes are legit. Like, what happened? So, I mean, for a 3-year turnaround or 3-year window or whatever you want to call it. It's exciting. It's fun.
It is exciting. Getting the football good always makes everything else good. Tell you what, it also, I mean, you were at Texas at the height of it,
Yes.
right? Texas isn't on the cover of Sports Illustrated because every freaking sport was good, right? And puts some pressure on the other programs. I think
Absolutely, it
a
does. Absolutely.
Especially, I think, when football's good.
I think that carries, and rightfully so, a special weight for sure. But yes, you were correct. If you know you're walking around campus and like, hey, softball won again last night. Track and field did this, and this, and that. You feel obligated to live up to the standard, and not that you don't already feel obligated, but it just, it throws a little extra weight on that bar. You don't want to be the people that don't live up to it.
Hey, in closing, your old coach Augie, there's a great YouTube video. I don't know if we've ever discussed this. Maybe I sent it to you once, but so writing this post, I also brought up John Makovic, who actually had a really interesting trend line that just fell apart, right, at Texas. So
His story's so weird to me.
it's really
Like, I
weird.
want to know more. Speaking of history, like, I want to know more about that.
So I'll give you a quick
Write a
two
book. Write
minute.
a book, Paul.
I'll write a book. That'd be great. But so Makovic came into Texas. He took over for it was a bad program was in a bad situation. David McWilliams hadn't worked out, even though everybody loved him. And Makovic basically goes 500 his first 2 years. And everyone's like, "Oh, get this guy out of here." And he's hard to like. He's arrogant. But he dragged Texas football into the modern era of passing, which was his great contribution to Texas. And the third year, he had a promising year. And then his fourth year, Texas goes like 10, 2, and 1. And all the players are back. And so they go into that fifth year, and that's the team that won the Big 12 title. So they underachieved all year, but then they beat Nebraska in the Big 12 title game. So then people are like, okay, like it's the worm is turning, right? And then that next year is when they had the 4-7 debacle and the Route 66 at UCLA, which I attended. That was my first year as a season ticket holder, Randy.
I
Did I ever tell you
remember
I set my tickets on fire and mailed them to Belmont?
you did not, but I remember exactly where I was watching that game.
Well, I was in the stands.
I was not in the stands, thankfully. I was in the recliner in my grandmother's house right down the road from where I lived, and me and my uncle were just sitting there staring at each other like, what is happening?
Did grandma hear a few choice words she didn't know her young grandson knew?
No, it's probably a little too young for that at that point.
Like, gee willikers,
Yeah, probably said something like that.
pick up the blitz. Anyway, so Makovic bombed, but I mean, the amazing thing about him was he could recruit some. I mean, he brought in talent and he really struggled to relate to alums, and he just had a weird perspective on winning and losing and like whatever, right? And so Augie had worked for John Makovic at Illinois. So, Augie coached at Illinois, right?
Yes. Yeah, it
Okay.
was in the middle of his Fullerton runs. He's got
Yes.
some really good Illinois stories
Oh,
that I can share at
I
some
would love
point,
to hear
but
them.
there's
But
some really, really good ones.
he turned that program around and they won the Big Ten, whatever, I don't know. But Makovic was his AD. He was the football coach and the AD, all right? And he and Augie did not get along because Augie, wants to win, right? If you guys played poorly, he didn't sleep that night,
Yeah,
right?
no, very processed, but yeah,
But it
very much
still
so.
bothered him, right?
Yep.
And Makovic just didn't have that burning, like, so Augie, like, this was about your life. Like, not just the sport, but the sport was like a vehicle for your life, right? It's like you have to care. And he just did not, he and Makovic were oil and water. So, long story short, Makovic makes it to Texas. They are in the market for a baseball coach. And Augie Garrido is now interested to leave Fullerton again after winning another national title there, right? So Texas goes, and of course they go to Makovic and they say, "Hey, you were his AD. What do you think?" And Makovic's like, "I can't recommend him." And so they hired Augie anyway. And Augie found out through the grapevine that Makovic had given him a no vote of confidence. And Augie went up to him. He's like, "Hey, John, good to see you." And he's like, "I heard that when they asked you, you said not to hire me. How does it feel to know that people here don't value your opinion at all? Then he just walked off. But later in the interview, he was talking about like sports and Augie and Rick Barnes coach different sports. They're different guys, but they get each other very quickly. Like they understand each other. He's like, he viewed John Makovic like an alien life form. Like he could not understand like what made this guy tick. And ultimately that was why he failed at Texas, even though, and there was also crazy stuff where part of the problem, like halfway through his tenure, was defensive coordinator. Makovic was really ego driven that he didn't want something to overshadow his offense. So Texas told him, hey, we're giving you a blank check to hire a defensive coordinator. Literally a blank check. Set the market. He could have gone and gotten Bob Stoops at Florida. Okay. And he went and hired one of his own assistants. He just promoted an assistant. And basically, it was like an FU. And so it was stuff like that that really prevented him from succeeding. But yeah,
Yeah.
he was a strange bird.
Seems like it. Seems
Yeah.
like it, but it's
How
weird.
does it
Like, I don't, it's
feel
a,
to
such
know
a
that your
weird deal.
word didn't count
Oh,
for
that's,
anything?
yeah, I've seen that. That's 100% something he would have done for sure.
Yeah, he definitely was not going to let that rest.
And yeah, that's hilarious, actually.
It's pretty great.
I'd love to have been there and see that interaction.
Well, when Makovic was eventually let go, he had to leave. And that meant he had to go buy a house, Randy. And he should have called Gabe Winslow. Now, Gabe was in. I think Gabe was like 14 years old around that time. So Gabe might have not been able to help him quite as well as he can help you now, but he probably would have helped him.
I'd say probably still could have helped him.
Probably still could have helped him. He's that gifted, ladies and gentlemen. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. He is a mortgage broker par excellence. That's French, Randy. That's how sophisticated this podcast is. And look, he's just really good at his job. I if you listen to the pod, you know his virtues. Over 20 years in the industry, former National Merit Scholar, diehard Texas Longhorn fan, and just really sharp at what he does. Randy has done 73 refis with him. And I think everyone associated tangentially in my friends group or anyone else has done about 12 as well. And they all rave about the service. They all rave about what he does and just his incredible knowledge level and getting the deal done. And also structuring really smart deals that work for you and not for Big Bank America. Call Gabe 832-557-1095. Hey man, I should have mentioned last week that was our 350th podcast. Everyone gets a trophy.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
And you were the co-host.
Oh, I was like, I've not been on 350
No,
podcasts,
but
Paul. No,
you
for that one, I was.
prospected.
That's pretty cool.
So obviously it's a pretty monumental thing that you were a part of. I want you to, so birth of your children, marriage to Whitney, baseball national championship, pro baseball career, Yoakum homecoming king or whatever you were.
Steak that I cooked last weekend.
No, don't diminish it. Where would you rank doing the 350th Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast?
Gotta be top 10, Paul. Gotta be.
I mean, it's got to be top 10, maybe top
I
five.
think you were looking more.
Are you still in it? I mean,
Your face tells me you were looking for more than top 10.
well,
Sorry.
here's the thing. You'll always be the 350th co-host of that show, right? Or the
Let's
350th
go for
show.
three. If it was 360, it would mean more because I was number 36. So
But
the number
360 just means you're
just
back
does
where
it.
you started.
Just doesn't. This is true.
If you'd been number 18, Randy, you would have really gone places. You could have pulled a 180. When you're pitching like shit, you can pull a 180.
Yeah, 360. Nothing changes. You just turn in a
360 did
circle and
nothing.
you're.
They're like, why is Randy spinning on the mound again?
No matter where you go, there you are.
Is it because we're in the different dugout? Randy
Yeah.
threw the ball out to the center field. He got
Maybe.
confused.
Yeah, maybe it's my fault for not teaching that. But yeah, I didn't. That's just one of those things that you don't think you have to say, and then it became very apparent that we should have said it.
All joking aside, you would be the ideal coach for a little kid.
We did do our first team breakdown without everybody yelling on the wrong number.
Oh,
Everybody
really?
yelled on three this
On
time.
three.
So
That's awesome. Hey,
progress.
I'll part with this. And so I coach flag, you know, I coach flag football, elite level, by the way, of the Colorado Springs Cowboys. And at one of our practices, so I try to mix it up of like, hey, we're actually trying to learn and like learn the skills of the game, but also like we're gonna have fun. So I have a, like a keep I keep a constant banter where I like make fun of the kids and like, you know, just keep things lively and interesting, right? Or in the middle of the practice, if a kid's wearing a hat, I'll just go, hey, everyone come in here real quick. Let's go. And they run in, they all take a knee, and I like, bring me Johnny's hat. Whoever brings me Johnny's hat is king of the day. And they're like, yeah. And then he's sitting there with like wide eyes. And I'm like, run. And he's like takes off running and they all chase him and tackle him. And the it breaks up the practice, but also it teaches them like first it made them run. And then secondly, it teaches them that like physical contact isn't gonna hurt them. Yes, I know it's flag football. Kids who are 8 and 9 are scared to like hit each other nowadays. It's hard to explain. But at one of my practices, I was sitting and everyone's taking a knee and they're all like intense and like serious and focused on the coach. And I'm sitting in the middle and I'm like, all right, so what are the things we're going to try to do to become a good team? And one of them was like, listen to the coach. And I was like, that's right. Listen to the coach. It's like, respect your teammates. I was like, that's right. Respect your teammates. And then I had a black kid named Micah and he goes, more black kids. And all the kids burst out laughing, and the parents that were nearby that heard it were dying, including Micah's mom. And Micah, maybe I was like, you have a point,
You
but
may be onto something.
not sure what I could say right now. Nonetheless, what are some other things we could do? Micah, good idea. What else? What else? Yeah. Dude.
That's
That was,
great.
and he said it like completely innocently. And you know, he's a fast, good kid,
Oh,
but
kids are the best, man. You never
it
know.
was
We had it.
awesome.
We were the first game we had. I was like, everybody, all right, everybody, get ready, get ready. They're gonna hit it. They're gonna hit it. And it was the person hitting wasn't the best player on the other team, we'll say.
Yeah.
And they were struggling to make contact. And I was like, hey, they're gonna hit it. Y'all got to get ready. And it was like maybe two swings and misses or whatever. And I was like, hey, you still got to stay ready. They're gonna hit it. And the little kid next to me looks up and goes, no, they're not. But you still got to be ready, man.
You look at your first baseman's like chasing a grasshopper.
Oh, man.
It's awesome. Kids are fun.
Hilarious.
But hey, if we do our job as adults, we'll ruin it for them as quickly as possible.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty much how it goes now.
All right. Well, hopefully we didn't ruin this podcast for you. For Randy Boone, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Hook 'em.